Good afternoon. I'm Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. On August 1st, 1966, Charles Whitman climbed the elevator of the University of Texas Tower and opened fire. In just 96 minutes, 14 people were dead and dozens were injured in an event that introduced the country to a new kind of tragedy. A new film titled Tower replays that horrible day as the heroes and survivors remember it. The film opens today at Film Forum, and I'm very pleased. It brings executive producer Meredith Vieira and director Keith Maitland to our show today. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So first, I hear the film is the winner of 3 South by Southwest Awards, including the Grand Jury Prize. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So this happened in 1966, and of all the shootings, why did you decide to retell this one 50 years later?
Well, for me, this was a story that I had been curious about for a very long time. I grew up in Texas, and I had heard about the Tower shooting from a teacher who had been there on campus that day. And so that was in seventh grade, so I was 12 years old when I first heard about the shooting. And it's some of the only information I ever heard about the shooting. This is not something that's taught in the curriculum in Texas history classes. It's not something that was taught on the campus of the University of Texas when I went there. And so that curiosity stayed with me for many years. And about 10 years ago, I read a really incredible article in Texas Monthly Magazine by Pamela Koloff that explored the stories of the people on the ground that day. And that really hit me. And I said, you know what? These are stories that need to be told. And I want to make a film.
So I was about to ask you, how did you come to the decision to focus on the victims rather than what we do today is focus on the shooter? But their stories were that compelling to you.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the thing is, out of my own curiosity, I had done research throughout the years looking for just information about what went on that day and what was it like. And the only information I ever came across online was about the sniper. What were his motivations? What led him to be there? Why did he do it? And I just could never relate to those questions. I wasn't interested in why did anybody do something like this. I was interested in what was it like to survive this, and how do you carry on when you're carrying around this kind of trauma? And so that article, 96 Minutes, really opened my eyes to the stories of people like Claire Wilson, a pregnant woman.
And we're gonna talk to her in a second. Don't give it away.
Yeah.
Don't give it away just yet. But one of the things you do, in addition to focusing in on the victims, is you do something different with this documentary. You use archival footage, but you also use animation. Why animation?
I got to tell you, when I first learned that Keith was going to use animation way back in the beginning, I questioned it immediately. I thought, what are we going to Disney now to tell such a serious story? And I didn't understand. I mean, it really threw me, and my associate, Amy Rapp, was wise enough to let me know that it was actually extremely innovative and a great tool to take you back to something that you couldn't go back to otherwise and to put you back at the scene. And now having seen it, I can't imagine this film being made any other way.
In terms of the experience of watching the animation, what does that do for the viewer? I know what it did for you, but what were you hoping the viewer would get out of it?
Well, you know, the thing about this style of animation, it's called rotoscopic animation, which means that underneath the hand-drawn layers of animated imagery, there are real actors and real video footage. And so with those real actors come real human emotions. And that's what I wanted to capture in recreation, was a very emotional and humanistic portrayal of what went on the ground that day. But I also wanted to transcend time and space. You know, the story happened 50 years ago, and I wanted to place viewers in the pocket of that feeling that was being described to me. But I didn't want them to see it through the eyes of a 68-year-old person looking back. I wanted to see it through the eyes of the 18-year-old person who was right there in it. And the animation offers that intimacy.
Mm-hmm. And you felt that when you saw it, Meredith.
I totally felt it, yeah. In the very beginning, it's a little jarring to me because it is so different. And then I was completely drawn into it. And there's something a little surreal about it, which is what that day was. Nobody had ever experienced anything like that in this country. And after that day, we changed.
Mm-hmm. And if I remember, this was 1966.
Right.
The assassination of President Kennedy was just 3 years before, maybe 2.5 years before. And this was something that the nation was still, like, we're so used to it now that to hear the sound of gunshots, we instantly know what to do. But on that day, people didn't know what that was. And you mentioned the name of Claire Wilson James. She was one of those people who, the sound was so foreign to her that they thought, she and her boyfriend at the time thought, that it was a joke what was happening.
Yeah. A million thoughts ran through Claire's minds and the minds of the hundreds and thousands of people who witnessed this firsthand. But Claire has told me that she thought maybe the war in Vietnam had broken out in Austin. Later, as she was losing blood and laying there, you have to understand, Claire was shot and remained conscious as she laid out in the hot Texas sun for over an hour plus. And so as she laid there and was in and out of consciousness, she questioned what was going on. She thought at one point she was being shot by an antimatter gun, like in a sci-fi movie.
Hmm.
And so hearing that, something sparked inside of me that said, this isn't what we are used to seeing on the news, where you get a quick soundbite and you get a quick bit of facts, and then we move on to try and jump into policy questions. Or this was a human story that didn't have easy answers.
And I think I mispronounced her name, Claire Wilson James, not Jones. But on that day, I think you have one of the students in the film who says that was the moment that separated the brave people from the scared people.
Well, if that's the woman I'm thinking of, she's the one who said, I learned that day that I was a coward. Hmm. And which I thought was such a brave thing to say. And I'm so glad that Keith included that in the film, because there were all those different reactions in the moment. Some people ran toward the victims. Others ran the other way. And I understand both. Totally. Mm-hmm. There's a real conflict, and you don't know what's going on. You talked about, you know, nobody experienced something like this. Remember the scene where it looks like a professor walking past Claire and her boyfriend. They've just been shot. It doesn't even cross his mind. He thinks they're just lying there. Mm-hmm. Says, get to class.
Mm-hmm. And someone, if I'm remembering the story right, isn't there someone who runs to her side and stays with her while this is happening? She's one of those people, Meredith, you said, who ran to the horror rather than run away.
That's right. That was Rita Star Pattern. Rita is the reason I made the film, you know, when it boils down to it. When I read about Claire's story, laying there in the hot sun and losing hope and worrying nobody would ever come to her rescue, and then from the bushes emerges a redheaded co-ed who bravely ran across the open pavement, totally vulnerable to the sniper's gaze, and she laid down next to Claire, and for over an hour she helped keep Claire conscious. She spoke to her, she asked her questions, and the entire time she was completely exposed. When I heard about that story, that's what made me say, this is a piece of history that needs to be known. Because, you know, growing up in Texas, I've heard a million times the stories of the Alamo and the stories of cowboys and Texas Rangers and the brave heroics. But you rarely hear about a human piece of bravery that is not about jumping into action and defeating the bad guys, but is about jumping into action and offering a human compassion, laying down next to somebody and just making a connection.
Did Claire and Rita ever reunite after the shooting? Do we know?
Once in the hospital, Rita came to visit Claire and brought her a painting, and that was it.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, sitting in today for Leonard Lopate on WNYC, WNYC.org. And I'm speaking with Meredith Vieira, who's the executive producer, and Keith Maitland, who's the director of a new documentary called Tower, about the first mass school shooting in our country's history. And the film focuses on the survivors of that horrible day. But we have to talk about the person who made that horrible day possible, the man by the name of Charles Whitman. Where was he on that day that made it possible for him to shoot at all of these people?
Well, the university campus was a 5-city block piece of geography. And at the center of the campus was a 27-story building, the University Tower. It's the symbol of the university, and it stands for enlightenment and growth and education. It's the center of a world that thousands and thousands of students go to learn and to grow. And so the fact that he had climbed that tower's heights and he took his guns and he held that campus hostage really changed the way people saw the university and changed the way the university saw itself. Mm-hmm. But that's where he was. He was at the top of the university tower at the center of it all.
And he got there by killing folks along the way mm-hmm. when he entered the building.
Wait, he killed his mother and sister?
His mother and his wife.
His mother and his wife before going to the university. And also there's a story of, as he's carrying all these guns, a person holds the door. The elevator wasn't working, and so she holds the door. But please, let me help you in.
There are a number of stories that of people interacting with the sniper before he opened fire. A lot of people had, you know, near misses, and I think it's natural for people to go back after an event like this and look for those near misses, trying to figure out why does one person live and another person get caught in the crosshairs.
And he did he really shoot for 96 uninterrupted minutes from that tower? Yeah.
That's the hardest thing to understand, I think, from today's perspective. And it's part of the reason why we took the approach in the film to really steep the story in the event and not gloss over that 96-minute idea. You know, when you hear the concept of 96 minutes, you say, wow, that's a really long time. But to be in it and to hear the gunshots over and over again and to look around for students hiding behind trees and hiding behind statues, looking for any bit of safety and any bit of shade, you know, you have to realize this is also about noon in August in Texas.
Mm-hmm. And now we have these SWAT teams that can go in quickly. Remember, if you look at the movie, it was the one police officer, all he had was a pistol, which would have been an effective down on the ground. You know, it was right. Somebody else who was asking students, does anybody have a shotgun? And they're trying to figure out, one of them was a veteran from Vietnam, right, who said, okay, first thing you need to do is set up a command post. So they were thinking on their feet, but it's not nearly as organized as it is now when something happens.
Yeah, and the local police then, what was their response? Did they have any response at that time?
Well, they just didn't know. Years? You know, in the same way that none of the students could relate what was happening to any experience they'd had before, the local police in Austin really had nothing to compare this to. Austin in 1966 was a lot different than Austin, Texas is today. Population was about 250,000. And Austin looked at itself as kind of a small town, and it had kind of a small town's mentality. This day changed all that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, to your point, Meredith, I mean, today, how many mass shootings have we endured, have we lived with, where you've got now children in elementary school who have to go through mass shooter training? The innocence of that time back in 1966 is just, I mean, it's astounding, heartbreaking, but in a way heartwarming in the sense that there was a time when we didn't live with such fear.
And now we live with it constantly. I mean, you can't operate under fear. You'd never get anything done. Mm-hmm. But I was saying to somebody else, now when there's a shooting, you don't respond horrified, because it's more like you're upset, but you almost expect it.
Mm-hmm. And you know
it's not surprising.
And you know that it's going to happen again, which is the terrifying thing
you
about the way
it
we
won't,
live now.
But right now, it seems like it will.
So who of the survivors participated in the making of this movie?
Yeah, the film focuses on the stories of eight characters. There are two students who were shot, Claire Wilson, who we've talked about, and a young boy who was a newspaper delivery boy. He was shot off his bicycle, Alec Hernandez. Mm-hmm. There was a radio reporter, Neil Spels, who heard the news over the police scanner, hopped into the radio station's station wagon with an FM transmitter, mm-hmm. drove onto campus and broadcast live. There was the young woman we talked about who said that she realized she was a coward that day, Brenda Bell, who went on to become a journalist, and she saw the events that day from the department, the English building, looking out the window, and her memory is the memory of a budding journalist, which is why we included her. She had such great contextual details. And then there's the two police officers who ended the siege, Ramiro Martinez and Houston McCoy. Martinez was off duty, saw it on the lunchtime news, and grabbed his uniform and decided to see where he could help. And McCoy was actually the first cop to get the call, but because he didn't have any instructions, he wasn't sure what to do. So he tried a number of different ways to engage with the shooter before finally being one of the two that ended it.
So there were civilians shooting back at the tower.
There were. And one of the civilians that is a main character is actually the bookstore manager from the university bookstore who ends up offering to help the police. He ends up being the second person out the door onto the tower deck. His name is Alan Crum. And he was deputized only moments before going out onto the deck. And his role is pivotal in ending it.
Before we go, Meredith, I have to ask you, your production company, which you founded, Meredith Vieira Productions.
There's an original name.
produced the film The Woman Who Wasn't There, about a woman who falsely claimed to be a 9/11 survivor. Quickly, what's that about?
She claimed that she was in one of the towers. She got out. Her fiancé, who was in the other one, did not make it out. And, you know, a lot of the survivors had survivor's guilt, and she convinced them to band together and to tell their story. And, in fact, she led the mayor at one point and the governor at that time down to Ground Zero to take a look at what had happened and to tell. And she had a very, very elaborate story, and it turned out she had made it all up. She was from Spain, and she had this love of America, and it's not clear why. And we didn't psychoanalyze her in the film. It was important to us that we not do that. But what happened was the New York Times wanted to do a story on her, and they started checking into, you know, her story, and they found, yeah, that doesn't ring true, this doesn't ring true, and started asking her questions. And then she got very nervous. She had made with this documentarian the beginning of a film about her story and everybody else's. He was sitting on all of this film, and she went to him and said, well, forget it, we're not going to do it. And then he put two and two together, and he said, oh, yes, we are. He went back to all the survivors and blew her cover, and then we put this film together. But it's an amazing story.
And it's incredible that people in this day believe, yes, with all the information we have, that they can get away with such a thing.
Well, she did for years.
She did. Both tonight and tomorrow night, Meredith Vieira and Keith Maitland will be participating in Q&As at Film Forum following the 8 p.m. screening of Tower. For more information, visit wnyc.org/Lopate. Meredith and Keith, thanks so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan.